Chime is changing the way people bank. It's not just another banking app. Chime unlocks fee-free and smarter banking that's built for you, not the 1%. Forget overdraft fees, minimum balance fees, and monthly fees. Chime turns everyday spending into real rewards and progress. Features like MyPay give you access to up to $500 of your paycheck anytime. And you can even get paid up to 2 days early. Earn up to 3% APY on your savings, 7 times higher than a traditional bank. And the Chime card is the newest way to unlock safer credit building and cashback, all on one card, with no annual fees, no interest, and no strings attached. My younger self would really have benefited from something like this. Chime is not just smarter banking. It is the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. It just takes a few minutes to sign up. Head to chime.com/redhanded. That's chime.com/redhanded.
Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services, a secured Chime Visa credit card, and MyPay line of credit provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. MyPay eligibility requirements apply, and credit limit ranges $20 to $500. Optional services and products may have fees or charges. See chime.com/fees info. Advertised annual percentage yield with Chime Plus status only. Otherwise, 1.00% APY applies. No min balance required. Chime card on-time payment history may have a positive impact on your credit score. Results may vary. See chime.com for details and applicable terms.
Hi, I'm Ashley Flowers, creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. Every Monday, me and my best friend Britt break down a new case, but not in the way you've heard before, and not the cases you've heard before. You'll hear stories on Crime Junkie that haven't been told anywhere else. I'll tell you what you can do to help victims and their families get justice. Join us for new episodes of Crime Junkie every Monday, already waiting for you by searching for Crime Junkie wherever you listen to podcasts.
Twenty-five years ago, we were all scared silly by the idea of stranger danger, the terrifying man in the trench coat hiding in an alleyway, ready to pounce and kidnap everyone's children. Do you remember the trench coat man?
Yes.
With the big eyes that we were shown at school, in school videos, for stranger danger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's such a, like, recessed memory that just, like, crawled out from the back of my brain.
I wonder, the way I'm visualizing him, is it actually what he looked like?
Should or
is it? Because I am imagining a little Trilby situation, some big eyes, kind of like the eye emoji, the looking eyes emoji, and a trench coat. And he'd, like, hide over a wall and look at children. Or is this like the Mandela effect where I'm just telling you this and now everybody is having this same weird memory?
No, I can't find it. Never is he mind. A cartoon? In my head, he's a cartoon.
He was a cartoon.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, somebody find it for us and maybe we'll continue to look after we finish recording this episode. But that is what I think of when I think of my childhood and the dangers that we were told about.
Mm-hmm.
Stranger danger, there's a man in a trench coat, possibly or possibly not wearing a trilby, hiding behind a wall and he's going to get you.
Mm-hmm.
Also, don't cross railways.
Yeah, don't play on the railway tracks. Don't mess around with Ouija boards.
Exactly. But what if this dangerous stranger wasn't someone lurking on a street corner or hiding in an alleyway? What if your child didn't even consider them to be a stranger? What if they weren't even an adult in a trilby and a trench coat? And worst of all, what if they weren't hiding down a dark alleyway, but rather lurking into your life as your child is sitting safely under your own roof? In today's case, we explore a story that reinforces the true stranger danger nightmare, the one that exists on the internet.
Lauren Lefebvre and Barry Bedner moved to the UK from America in 1996. 3 years later, Breck, the eldest of the Bedner children, was born. Breck's three younger siblings, Sebastian, Carly and Chloe, were triplets, and they came along very soon after.
It's got absolutely nothing to do with this story, apart from the fact that he has triplet siblings, but fucking hell, triplets.
Yeah, fraternal as well. Yikes. We've got a lot of multi-birth cases coming up, actually.
Mm.
So yeah, the triplets were soon hot on Breck's tail. And Breck's parents eventually separated, but they maintained a good relationship and the family were happy and close. As a young boy, Breck's biggest passion was building, fixing and tinkering with anything he could get his hands on. Breck and his dad Barry's shared hobby was going to the local fields and firing model rockets into the sky. I think that's illegal.
Ooh.
Because do you remember, did you ever read Danny Champion of the World when we were kids?
Yes.
And he makes like paper lanterns.
Mm.
That's fully illegal now.
Oh, yeah. I think I did know that actually, because people were letting them off at their weddings and stuff. And they were like, you can't do this anymore.
Yeah, it's not very environmentally friendly.
No. Nora is releasing balloons. Helium balloons.
Oh, God, I know.
Also, a fucking whale can choke on it. Don't do it.
And maybe because of his illegal rocket firing, or maybe because of something else entirely, as Brett grew older, his aptitude for engineering became focused specifically on computers.
Breck loved computers. He loved building them, he loved fixing them, he loved tinkering with them, and he loved playing video games on them. Age 13, Breck was an A-star high-achieving student and budding air cadet by day. And by night, he was a full-on, full-time computer fanatic.
By 2013, age 13, Breck had settled into a group of friends who all shared his passion for computer gaming, and every night after school they would come home and play together. At this point, it's important to remember that this isn't the now times internet, it's the 2013 internet. And a lot has changed in the past 9 years. I think the extent of my internet usage in 2013, which is the year I graduated university, Facebook only, I had a BlackBerry in 2013. I remember very specifically, I didn't get Instagram until I was in Korea.
I didn't get Facebook until I was at uni.
Yeah, but you know, you had boys in your classrooms, I didn't.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I remember I was talking to my friend Maya about this, and one of our friend's elder brothers was like very cool, lived in LA, was a bit older than us. And Maya was like, he showed me this picture with the most like basic filter on it in like 2011. And I was like, what is this witchcraft?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Like 2013 doesn't seem like it was a very long time ago. And in real time, it's not that long ago.
Yeah.
But in computer internet times, it might
ages.
As well be another fucking generation. Another
Absolutely.
Fucking
Several.
Era.
Yeah.
And I also think one of the biggest changes as well from the early days of the home PC mm-hmm. to today is that when we first got computers, I can't remember what year that was, but the first computer we had in my family home when I was a kid, when I was around Breck's age, it was in a communal space.
Oh, yeah, the computer room, yeah.
It was in the computer room, or it was in the dining room,
yeah.
or it was at the back of the living room on the dining table. It was not in my personal bedroom
no.
as a laptop or as a smartphone that I can access the internet. I think that is one of the most scary and biggest pivotal changes when it comes to the internet, because at least then your parents could sort of see what you were doing.
Mm.
Even if, you know, you're on MSN, you could have been chatting to any old pedo, but they could see something.
Yeah.
You know? You weren't like chat rouletting them in front
no,
of your parents.
No. I think by the time I was doing my GCSEs, I did have a laptop, but that's only because hashtag dyslexia, I typed all of my exams. Mm-hmm. So I did have a laptop, but it never even crossed my mind to be secretly on it, mainly because my mum would just come in my room whenever she wanted.
Oh, yeah. There's that too.
So for context, in 2013, creators on YouTube would happily use racial slurs for comic effect. We've all seen the video of Shane Dawson in blackface. People would often share gory videos as well for a bit of a laugh. And Reddit even had a community dedicated to cute female corpses. They still have sexy abortions.
They do still have sexy abortions. It's just, I think the internet is still obviously a wild place.
Mm-hmm.
The wild, wild west. Maybe that's what the WWW stands for.
Wild, wild west, not world wide web.
You can find me at wildwildwest.google.com. But no, it is very much so. But I think back then in 2013, there weren't even the sort of safety precautions that are in place now.
No.
In existence.
No, I don't think you could. You could put a child lock on your TV via teletext, mm-hmm. I think, was mm-hmm. the...
I remember teletext.
Yeah, getting the weather updates off teletext, Absolutely. Booking your holiday on teletext.
Yep. With that black background and the neon font.
Mm-hmm.
What a time.
What a time to be alive. Speaking of the internet, I was going to tell you this on Under the Duvet. I've been meaning to tell you for weeks, actually, but I keep forgetting, so I'll just tell you now. A friend of mine, mm-hmm. who's getting married in Switzerland, his wife-to-be is a data scientist, oh. and she did her postdoctorate at CERN in Switzerland, which is why she's there.
Mm-hmm.
And she is currently working on a ginormous telescope. There's going to be one in Cape Town and one in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And these telescopes individually are going to produce as much data as on the internet every year. So her job is to figure out how that's going to work.
Oh, well, that sounds terrifying.
Big girl stuff. Mm. Big girl stuff. So yeah, the same amount of data as is on the internet now, every year that telescope is going to produce.
I don't want to know.
I asked her, I was like, what do you think? Are there aliens? And are you sick of that question? She was like, I think, honestly, if we find extraterrestrial life, it'll be like mold or something really boring.
Yeah, we don't want to find something more advanced. They'll fucking kill us. They will. That's what will happen. So let's stop looking for them, okay. I say.
Sorry, back off the Internet Data Telescope and back onto the 2013 internet. So in 2013, things like being able to report users for breaking the rules of a specific website were still very new and often didn't work particularly well. If at all, no Facebook admins here. So for the most part, the internet was sort of left to police itself.
And all of this was especially true for the bit of the internet that Breck and his friends were particularly interested in. PC gaming. Now, PC gaming is a bit more involved than, say, using a console like Xbox. If you got an Xbox for your birthday, you just plug it in, connect it to your TV, and away you go. You'd send your mates a couple of friend requests, and straight away you could chat with them and play games together. I never actually did any of that, but I do have a brother who did all of that. So it seems quite straightforward if you're buying like a standard games console and doing your gaming that way. However, on a PC, things aren't that simple. On a PC, you need all of your friends to be using the same app to communicate with each other, and you either need to buy or build a computer powerful enough to play the latest games. This more involved nature of PC gaming is the reason that it tends to lend itself to a slightly more cliquey and realistically slightly more nerdy crowd.
Brett, being the budding computer engineer he was, he built his own computer. And every night he would go home to play computer games and chat with his friends on TeamSpeak. TeamSpeak is a messaging app, a bit like an early version of Discord or Microsoft Teams. And just like Discord or Teams, to chat with your friends, you need to be invited to an online group within the app, which is called a server. The TeamSpeak server that Breck and his friends used was run by someone called Lewis Daines. And according to the BBC documentary on this very case, at the height of the server's popularity, it had over 400 people using it regularly. And in the today times, that might not sound like that much when everyone who was on Love Island for half a second has millions of followers. But running a server like that, that big in 2013, would have been an enormous undertaking. The person running it would have needed a great knowledge of computing and all things internet. Luckily, or maybe not so luckily, those were things that Lewis Daines had in spades.
I am fed up with influencers telling me I need a complicated 10-step skincare routine just to take care of my skin. That's why I've defected to OneSkin. Their products aren't about hype or fancy packaging. They're based on real science. OneSkin's research boffins discovered OS1, a game-changing peptide that works to slow down the skin's aging process at the source. Every time I do my new routine, I'm basically deploying a crack squad to repair damaged cells, support collagen production, and strengthen my skin barrier. Born from over a decade of longevity research, OneSkin's OS1 peptide is proven to target the visible signs of aging, helping you unlock your healthier skin now as you age. For a limited time, try OneSkin with 15% off using code redhanded at oneskin.co/redhanded. That's 15% off at oneskin.co with code redhanded. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. These days, I'm all about quality over quantity. Buy nice over buy twice. I've had way too many of my clothes wear out after less than a year of wearing them. So now, if it's not well made and versatile, it's not coming in. That's honestly why I love Quince. The fabrics feel elevated, the cuts are thoughtful, and crucially, the pricing actually makes sense. Quince makes high-quality wardrobe staples using premium fabrics like 100% European linen, 100% silk, and organic cotton poplin. These are versatile, well-made pieces that make getting dressed simple without paying some crazy markup. Quince works directly with safe, ethical factories and cuts out the middleman. So you're not paying for the brand or for fancy retail stores. You're just paying for quality clothing. Right now, go to quince.com/redhanded for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's a full year to wear it and love it, and you will. Now available in Canada too. Don't keep settling for clothes that don't last. Go to quince.com/redhanded for free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/redhanded.
Dates.
Daines was a 17-year-old gifted computer engineer, originally from Grays, Essex, with such a deep knowledge of computing that it was no wonder he had a full-time job in New York working for the US government. Once Brack and his friends had joined Daines' TeamSpeak server, they very quickly got to know him. Not only did Daines run the online space that the boys hung out in, but he also ran super-fast servers, so they could play games in their own private online space away from the public. Daines also made no attempt to hide the fact that he was a bit older than Breck, because remember, he's 17. Breck and his friends, like we said, they're 13.
In fact, Daines very much enjoyed playing the part of the older boy in the group, who had more life experience, more money, a better knowledge of gaming. And Daines proved how good he was at computer engineering by modifying the games they all played together, changing and altering the computer code to create completely new games. To a group of 13-year-old boys who just started dipping their toes into the internet-y waters, Lewis Daines was the coolest guy they'd ever met. And to Breck, Daines quickly became an idol. It really doesn't take much when you're 13.
No, it doesn't. But it does help when you're like, I'm a tech millionaire or tech mega richo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I own all these servers, etc., etc.
Who was your idol when you were 13?
Who was my idol when I was 13? God. What year are you in when you're 13?
You're 7, you're 8.
I honestly don't. It was probably something incredibly tragic, like Avril Lavigne. I don't know.
I think mine's more tragic. It was Ruthie Henshaw.
Who's that?
She's a musical theatre performer.
That's what I would have guessed.
Yeah, yeah. Love you, Ruthie. And just like 13-year-old Hannah and her parasocial relationship with Ruthie Henshaw, Daines was everything Breck wanted to be. He was a tech genius. He made loads of money, and he was traveling the world working on computers. Soon, Breck wanted to hang out with Lewis Daines more than anyone else. I still want to hang out with Ruthie Henshaw. Ruthie, hit me up.
And Daines quickly took Breck under his wing, teaching him how to modify games and talking to him more and more about the coding that Breck loved so much. As Breck and his friends got to know Daines better, he started to reveal more about his life abroad, working as a computer engineer. He told them how he made millions of dollars from trading and mining Bitcoin, and that his wage was so high that he'd actually given most of his money away to charity. He also flashed his card in front of the younger boys, spending money on renting super-fast servers for them to play games on.
Soon, Breck was spending so much time online with Daines that Breck's mum, Lorin, began to pick up on their online friendship. She also noticed that Daines, unlike the other boys, was a lot more confident when she came into Breck's room. Daines would often talk to her over the microphone, asking how she was doing, and going out of his way to make conversation. Lorin, an American herself, remember, would ask Daines if he was enjoying his time in New York, and why he wasn't out with a friend or a partner, to which Daines always said he'd rather stay in playing games with Breck and the others. And soon, Lauren's very own red flag sensor began to tingle. That is quite a mum thing. I remember when I first moved into the flat that I met you in, mm-hmm. living with two guys in their 30s, and I was, 27, something like that. And my mum was like, why are they in their 30s and they haven't hooked up with anyone yet? They must be really weird. And here we are. Here we are, 31.
Not living in that flat anymore, though.
No, I have. No, I'm not.
And it was also around this time that Dane started to talk to 13-year-old Breck more seriously about Breck's future. He told Breck that his talents were being wasted at school and that he should consider starting a tech company of his own, saying that after all, he, Daines, had started his career at Breck's age. And the more time that Breck and Daines spent together online, the more Daines drilled down on the rhetoric of how Breck's education was a total waste of time and how school was absolutely holding him back. And soon things progressed further, and Daines began to confront Breck on things like going to church. He even had the confidence to argue with Breck's mum, Lorin, about Breck's religious upbringing over voice chat. Yep.
Lorin was starting to feel that the less time Breck spent with this rich older boy, the better. And she wasn't the only one. I would think the same thing if a teenage boy had the absolute audacity to tell me how to raise my child over a computer.
Yeah.
Some of the other kids in Breck's friendship group also started to feel a bit weird about the fact that even those in the group who'd never met in person were friends on Facebook, except Daines. Mm-hmm. In fact,
There was no record of Lewis Daines on the internet at all, apart from his gaming profiles. And it wasn't long before some of the older boys started to question parts of Daines' narrative. They even started to make fun of him, something that I'm sure you can imagine Daines did not like one single bit. In response, Daines started banning people who questioned him from coming into his TeamSpeak server, and he began spending more one-on-one time with Brex.
You can't be mean to me. I'm going home, I'm telling.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much part of Daines' psychopathology, as we will go on to discover. So as his relationship with Daines got more intense, Breck's friends tried to speak with him about how it was becoming unhealthy. But Breck didn't like the way that his friends were talking about Lewis Daines. Daines was his friend. He'd taught him loads about coding. He'd spent real money on servers so that they could all play together. It felt like they were being really unfair. It started to feel like they weren't really his friends anymore. And I think, again, this speaks to Breck's, like, not just, like, he's a 13-year-old kid, mm-hmm. so obviously he's naive, but it also speaks to his loyalty. He's like, this guy's done so much for us. Like, why is everybody questioning him? And the boys who are questioning him are older than Breck. They're a couple of years ahead of him. You have to remember that he is a 13-year-old child. He really will take things at face value. And Daines has done things that make it seem plausible, like paying for those servers. Then Daines told Breck some absolutely heartbreaking news. He told Breck that he'd hacked into a voice channel that Breck's friends were using to talk about him behind his back. And apparently, according to Daines, these boys had been bitching about Breck, saying that they'd never really liked him in the first place.
That's like every 13-year-old's worst nightmare. Like, you're so insecure in yourself anyway.
Yeah. And then you already know that your friends have been challenging some of your decisions, like hanging out with Daines. Of course you're going to believe that they've been talking about you. So of course, for Breck, this was absolutely crushing. As far as he was concerned, they were his best friends. And when the other boys found out what had been said, they tried reaching out to Breck through the TeamSpeak server. They even joined a voice call with Breck and tried to convince him that Daines was lying to him. But remember that these calls and these chats are happening on Daines' own server. So as soon as they start, Daines can see that they've started, and he just swoops in, enters the chat, and defends himself and says that those boys are the ones who are lying. And in November 2013, the older boys who'd grown tired of Lewis Daines decided to leave the TeamSpeak server for good, and it would be the last time any of them would speak to Breck Bednar.
Breck had now been speaking to Daines for about 8 months. He was a shadow of the boy who'd joined the server with his friends. Breck's school friends had noticed that he didn't really smile anymore or join in with general chit-chat, and he'd stopped taking any interest in his other hobbies, like air cadets. Air cadets, for our international listeners, is where children pretend to be in the Air Force, and they give them guns, and they are allowed to fly planes. And that's fine, apparently. Breck had become completely isolated from his friends, and now, through Daines' encouragement, he was pushing his family away too. It started off small. When Daines would hear Breck's mum in the background of their voice calls, he would tell Breck not to listen to her and tell him to refuse to do his chores. With this, Breck started to develop an attitude towards his parents that they'd never seen before. Worried about the change in her son, Lorin tried to confront Lewis Daines on his TeamSpeak server. The pair had an argument over text chat, with Lorin asking Daines why he felt he could interfere with her parenting. Daines told her that Breck was, quote, a good boy, and that, quote, it was his siblings who should be doing the cleaning, not Breck. Pardon?
I know.
What's happening?
Aghast.
Yeah, but again, it's like, it's part of the ritual, isn't it? Because it's like, look, I'm standing up for you when no one else will. Your mum's such a bitch, she makes you do cleaning around the house. It's like, what?
I suppose it's a reasonably unique situation for Breck's mum, because she's like, oh, all of these changes are happening to my son, and I can pinpoint it to this one thing that he's doing, where quite often with teenagers, parents are just sort of told that, like, they'll grow out of it.
Yeah. Because obviously the change that's happening in Breck is also happening coincidentally at age 13, which is probably when you start to see the biggest change happening in your child insofar as their attitude towards you. But the influence of Lewis Daines is palpable, especially when it's not even like she's hearing it secondhand from Breck being like, Lewis says I shouldn't have to do this. He's saying it to her.
I just can't even imagine that.
We'll come back to talking about Lewis Daines, but yeah, it's a lot. So of course, after this weird call in which Lewis Daines is telling Lauren even more how she should be parenting her child, Lauren felt that she now had some semblance of a terrifying insight into the mind of the person that her son was spending all of his time with. So Lauren and Breck's dad, Barry, threatened to take away Breck's computer if he kept acting out. And they told Breck that if he wanted to keep speaking to Danes, they would need to meet him in person. Lorraine was rightly worried, of course, that Danes was actually some sort of 40-year-old paedophile. But Danes refused to meet Breck's parents, saying that he had too much work on and that it was absolutely impossible.
And so, on the 17th of December 2013, Lauren contacted Surrey Police. She gave them Lewis Danes' name, age, and told them that she believed he was originally from Essex. The police told Lorraine that they would check their system, but Lorraine never heard anything back. One of the most crushing things about this case is they do everything.
That's such an important point to make. I mean, yeah, things are going to get very, very, very bad. It breaks my heart because, yeah, Lorraine and Barry do everything right. They try their absolute best to help their son. And I don't want to be like some sort of scaremonger being like, this yeah. could happen to anybody. This could happen to your child. Quick. Wah! But like, that's what it feels like.
Yeah. If the police had got back to Lorraine, if they had even bothered to run the check that she had asked for, which it seems like they didn't. Because if they had, Lorraine would have been told that Lewis Danes had been charged with undisclosed sex offences 3 years earlier, when he was just 15.
Having not heard back from the police and becoming increasingly worried about Breck's safety, Lorraine and Barry decided to have a serious talk with their son. And under instruction from Lewis Danes, Breck secretly recorded that talk so that Danes could listen to what was being said.
Jesus.
Yep. And this clip that we're about to play you now is from that very same talk, and it was later recovered by the police.
It might sound like paranoia, but it felt like it was even grooming behavior.
That's a harsh term to say grooming.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're concerned, Brett. And the stuff that we hear scares us to death. It just sounds incredibly odd. Working for a major consulting firm in the U.S. when you're 16 years old.
17.
It's fanciful. And what that does is it raises a flag to us that something else is wrong here.
It's going to sound weird, but there's no one else who sort of I bear interest with, in not in real life, in gaming. There's not that connection where you have sort of mutual interest. I don't really see the value of worrying about this anymore. I will do what you want. I will sort of distance myself from Lewis. It's not worth getting too involved with someone who you don't know in real life, I guess.
So as we all heard there, Breck's dad, because he's an adult man with an adult man brain, wasn't convinced that Lewis Danes was who he said he was. I think he actually said it's laughable.
Yeah. And again, it's just like, obviously the conversation between Breck and his parents there is confrontational, but they are trying very hard to treat him like an adult.
Yeah.
Sit him down, have a conversation, be like, point out the flaws in this story being presented to him by this stranger on the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, they're doing commendable parenting. And I can't describe the feeling of, you know, when even, you know, obviously we don't have kids, but like sometimes when I deal with people who are younger than me, they'll say something and I'll be like, no, you didn't. There is just no way that is true. Until you have enough life experience, I think, you're more likely to believe what people say and you're also more likely to lie and expect people to believe it.
Oh, yeah.
But obviously, because Breck's only 13, he couldn't understand why his parents were being so mean about his friend. But he could probably sense that arguing too hard might result in his computer being taken away. So Breck decided to play ball. However, Lauren was not going to be pacified that easily. And to make sure that Breck stood by his word, she took away all of his gaming equipment. I don't really see what other choice she had.
No, this is the thing. She's been pushed to the point that she has no other option.
And Breck took all of his gaming situations being confiscated extremely badly. But his parents felt like they had no choice because they didn't. They were pleased to hear no mention of Lewis Danes over Christmas 2013. In fact, it finally seemed like they had their old son back. Little did they know, Danes had secretly sent Breck a mobile phone. This is like, I'm trying to think of a comparison that doesn't sound flippant. I mean, it is what it is, which is an older person manipulating someone younger into a relationship that's completely outrageous.
Yeah. The power dynamic here is, although they are only a couple of years apart, is completely outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
And you see here that Danes is obsessed with Breck because he has access to other boys through his server. When his parents take away his gaming equipment and he can no longer do that, Danes doesn't just move on to somebody else. He knows. And that's why he sends his mobile to Breck to continue that relationship.
Yeah.
And this sending of the secret phone might seem small, but it is such a significant moment in this story because it's the moment that Breck Bednar and Lewis Danes' relationship became physical and they were no longer just interacting virtually. This moment also represents a big risk for Danes. So far, he's managed to separate himself from Breck's life through a kind of virtual smokescreen. But by sending Breck a phone, he creates a very real physical connection to the person who he is grooming.
And grooming is absolutely 100% what is going on here. Firstly, we know what you've all started to suspect, that Lewis Danes isn't who he says he is. But the thing is, he was 18, and he was originally from Grays in Essex. But that's pretty much all of it when it comes to the truth-telling. It seems obvious, because you're all intelligent people, that he was not employed by the US government, and he didn't live in America or even work there. Lewis Danes was abandoned by his parents aged 6, and then pushed around the foster care system. Age 16, his grandparents rented him a flat in Grays, Essex, and left him to it. And that is where he had been living ever since.
The online persona that Lewis Danes had created had been shaped specifically to appeal to a certain kind of person. In this case, young techie boys with an interest in video games. And this is an absolutely classic groomer move. And groomers, as we've often said before on this show, are some of the best profilers around. They know exactly who they need to become in order to seduce their victims. And they also know which of the potential sort of group of people in front of them might be the most susceptible to being groomed successfully.
Absolutely.
So as a rule of thumb, according to Dr. Ian Elliott in an interview with Operation 250, groomers don't happen across their victims by accident. They position themselves in the path of their victims. And a fun little river monsters analogy for you. It's a bit like those eels that will wait in the rocks for fish to swim past. So they don't have to exert all the effort swimming around trying to catch them. You put yourself in a good little hidey hole and you wait for them to come to you. In Lewis Danes' case, this was done by creating a TeamSpeak server used by over 400 young boys with an interest in gaming.
Danes knew that his targets would find the idea of an older, more experienced boy who was a travelling tech genius very appealing, and that they'd be too naive to see through it. And once Danes identified Breck as vulnerable to his manipulation, he doubled down on his backstory, creating an even more elaborate lie that was created specifically to lure Breck in, and he also turns him against all of his other friends.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the isolation tactics we'll go on to talk about, but it is all classic groomer behaviour. And, I mean, all of this feels very like you can wrap your head around it. You can see how this played out. But we actually spoke to producer Seb because he is, I think he's probably maybe the same age that Breck would have been. I think that's right. I don't know. I should have checked. But basically, coincidentally, Seb was a PC gamer who went home every night to chat with his friends on TeamSpeak in 2013. And he told us that at the time, it wasn't unusual to meet people through gaming who lived abroad. It was also not uncommon to play with people who were a bit or maybe even a lot older than you. And it was very common that those older people would be the ones running the servers that you chatted through. He also said that within the PC gaming community, it was also very common to come across people who had, or at least said they had, very cool, very well-connected jobs. Everyone knew someone who worked for a game company and could get you free game codes, for example, or maybe who worked for a computer engineering firm and would be able to rent cheap servers. It might seem unbelievable that Lewis Danes was an 18-year-old computer engineer living in New York working for the US government, and that's because it is, but it's not far enough from possible that a 14-year-old Seb apparently wouldn't have also fallen for it. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Isn't it also just so insidious there? Because obviously I never did this, and it's interesting because Seb was in TeamSpeak servers in 2013. This idea that the people running the servers are also in there communicating.
Yeah.
So just like we saw with Lewis Danes, if he ever sees anything happening that he doesn't like, he can also control that situation and manipulate it.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, like some sort of early role play game where he can pretend to be whoever he wants, create this community, except everyone's real, and then fuck with their lives in there. Because he has like omnipotent power and like eyes on everything. It's really terrifying.
I don't like it.
And this is the thing, like, you and I, as people who are, you know, 5-6 years older than the people that would have been doing this, as in like Seb and Breck and whatever, didn't know any of this, don't know any of this. Imagine the lack of knowledge that just normal parents would have.
Oh my God. I think, and that's what I keep thinking about with Lorraine and Barry. Like, they're doing so well considering this is kind of like undiscovered ground for them. He's the oldest child. Also, they're living in a country where they're not from. Mm-hmm. And all of this internet stuff's going on.
Absolutely. And I think they have no idea what they're up against in Lewis Staines. But the other thing I also think is that being an older child, as I am, as you are, Breck is so intelligent and he's so capable that I think the reason it even went on as long as it did is because they would have been like, he's so smart. Mm-hmm. Our son is so smart. Our son is so capable. We've raised him properly. Nothing dangerous is going to happen on the internet. He'll know how to make good, safe decisions. And I'm not, this is not me victim blaming Breck. He's the 13-year-old child who was manipulated by somebody older than him. What I mean is, like, there would have been that thinking that Breck knows better than we do in this space for a while before they start to see the danger starting to erupt.
The thing is, victims of grooming often feel like they have a special connection with their abuser, and that connection is often used against them. I think a common misunderstanding that people have is that groomers only go after vulnerable kids from broken homes, so kids who are already being abused or neglected. But with Breck, that's just not the case at all. And that's because anyone can be a potential victim of a person like Lewis Staines. It's like we see, you know, with cult formation, with blah, blah, blah. Like, if you're put through a set of circumstances, you do become more susceptible to stuff like this.
Absolutely. And I think actually the cult formation is a really interesting point to make because, like you said, Breck absolutely was not your quote unquote typical sort of vulnerable to manipulation target. He comes from a home where he is incredibly well supported, incredibly well loved, a very affluent family. Like, he's not wanting for anything, but that's not what left him open to the manipulation. Yeah. And like with cults, we see that typically cult leaders don't tend to go after the dregs of society.
No.
They want to go after people who are capable. They want to go after people who are high achievers. And that is what you see here with Lewis Staines.
And the reason Breck fell into Staines's net is clear from the secret recording we heard earlier, in which Breck told his parents that there was no one else he shared interests with. So I think when we sort of traditionally conjure up the image of a vulnerable child, you don't really think of someone like Breck. He's from a very strong family unit. He just happened to have a passion and a drive for something which was manipulated by Lewis Staines.
And victims of grooming also often, like we said before, isolate themselves from their friends and their family through the encouragement of their abuser. Yet again, we see that this is clear in Breck, who pushed his friends and his family away. And according to the NSPCC, which is a charity here in the UK, children also producing sort of expensive equipment.
I've read that, yeah.
Yeah, like clothes, like mobile phones, etc. That is like one of the number one indicators that that child is being groomed. Like, people who listen to the podcast know that I used to produce child protection conferences in another life. And that was always one of the number one signs that they would say to look out for.
Yeah.
If a child is suddenly presenting with very expensive items, that is being bought for them by someone who is most likely exploited. I am fed up with influencers telling me I need a complicated 10-step skincare routine just to take care of my skin. That's why I've defected to OneSkin. Their products aren't about hype or fancy packaging. They're based on real science. OneSkin's research boffins discovered OS1, a game-changing peptide that works to slow down the skin's aging process at the source. Every time I do my new routine, I'm basically deploying a crack squad to repair damaged cells, support collagen production, and strengthen my skin barrier. Born from over a decade of longevity research, OneSkin's OS1 peptide is proven to target the visible signs of aging, helping you unlock your healthier skin now as you age. For a limited time, try OneSkin with 15% off using code REDHANDED at oneskin.co/redhanded. That's 15% off at oneskin.co with code REDHANDED. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. These days, I'm all about quality over quantity. Buy nice over buy twice. I've had way too many of my clothes wear out after less than a year of wearing them. So now, if it's not well made and versatile, it's not coming in.
That's honestly why I love Quince. The fabrics feel elevated, the cuts are thoughtful, and crucially, the pricing actually makes sense. Quince makes high-quality wardrobe staples using premium fabrics like 100% European linen, 100% silk, and organic cotton poplin. These are versatile, well-made pieces that make getting dressed simple without paying some crazy markup. Quince works directly with safe, ethical factories and cuts out the middleman. So you're not paying for the brand or for fancy retail stores. You're just paying for quality clothing. Right now, go to quince.com/redhanded for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's a full year to wear it and love it, and you will. Now available in Canada too. Don't keep settling for clothes that don't last. Go to quince.com/redhanded for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/redhanded.
...or abusing them. So as you can see, the signs that Breck was indeed being groomed really started adding up. And lastly, victims of grooming often feel that they are being trusted with some sort of valuable information that they have to keep secret. Again, very akin to like cult mm-hmm. formation. There is a secret here that you're going to learn, but only people in the within will know about it, not people outside. And Danes used this tactic from the beginning by hinting at his involvement with the US government. And he used this idea of sharing valuable information to lure Breck into a nightmarish situation. But we'll come back to that later.
For now, let's stick with Breck. By February 2014, Breck's parents, Lorin and Barry, were satisfied that they'd heard nothing of Lewis Danes for over 2 months. So they figured that it would be okay for Breck to have his computer back. Shortly after this, Breck had his 14th birthday and went on a school trip to Spain. In Spain, Breck even managed to meet a girl, killing the 14-year-old game.
Absolutely.
Breck's friends and family were all over the moon that Breck had grown in confidence and seemed to have found a life away from the internet and, crucially, away from Lewis Danes. On Sunday the 16th of February 2014, Breck's dad, Barry, picked Breck up from the airport, and he was excited to welcome home a tall, confident, happy young man. When Breck got back to his dad's house, he told him that he wanted to visit his friend Tom. Again, Breck's dad was so excited that Breck wanted to meet a friend in actual person and that he hadn't just jumped straight back onto his computer that he said that he would take him to Tom's house himself. But the new confident Breck told his dad not to worry, that he could get to Tom's on his own. And that would be the last time that Barry Bednar would see his son alive.
A few hours after leaving to see Tom, Breck sent his dad a text message to say that the pair had eaten some pizza and that he'd like to stay the night at Tom's house. Breck also spoke about how he and Tom were creating a, quote, faster operating system for something. This understandably didn't mean much to Barry Bednar, but with the benefit of hindsight, it does ring a tiny little alarm bell in the back of our minds, does it not, dear listener? Even if you put aside the Lewis Danes connection. Creating a faster operating system isn't something that two boys just do at a sleepover. It's something that companies like Microsoft or Apple would spend years doing. It was a fantastical lie. A lie constructed by none other than Lewis Danes.
Also a lie I would have believed. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, exactly. There's no shade on Barry.
No,
Barry,
I would have been like, okay, have fun. Do you need a USB stick? Can I tempt you with an SD card, maybe?
I can clear this one for you.
Would you like me to save that as a PDF? I saw this amazing tweet the other day. It was like, oh, I was sitting on a plane with my dad and someone was ill and they're like, is anyone a doctor? And my dad nudged me and went, that should have been you. And I'm like, dad, like, not now. And he's like, oh, if only they needed a graphic designer. Why don't you ask them to print a PDF? How would that help? Then the next day, on the 17th of February, 2014, one of Breck's friends, quote-unquote Tom, so the same name as the person that Breck had told his dad he was going to go and see, this Tom logged onto his computer early in the morning. It was the first day of half term, and he wanted to pack in a good day of gaming. Soon after the real Tom logged onto TeamSpeak, so did Lewis Danes, and he told Tom that he had some bad news. Danes told Tom that Breck had come over to his house the night before in a complete mess, that Breck had been suicidal, and that there had been an accident. Danes told Tom that Breck was dead. He also allegedly shared pictures of Breck's body on the server, although we can't find a solid source for that one. By this point, other members of Breck's online friendship group began to log on to TeamSpeak and read the awful news. And sadly, the first thing that Breck's family knew about Breck's death was a member of the TeamSpeak server texting one of Breck's younger siblings to ask if the rumour was true.
And at around the same time, Lewis Daines called 999.
Essex Place Emergency.
Hi there. Hello. I need police and a forensics team to my address, please.
What do you mean? What's happened?
My friend and I got into an altercation, and I'm the only one who came out alive.
Are you telling me you've killed somebody?
Yes, I am.
Right, and who am I speaking to?
My name is Lewis Daines. I'm 18 years old, and I live...
Right, okay. And what's actually happened?
My friend came to stay the night with me yesterday, feeling very down, feeling suicidal. And I woke up this morning, he was in a mess. I tried to calm him down. I hugged him, then said that I was there for him. I tried.
What's his name?
Breck. B-R-E-C-K. Bednar. B-E-D-N-E-R.
Sorry,
B-R-E-C-K.
Breck.
Yes.
And then his surname is?
Bednar. B-E-D-N-E-R.
Okay, so he came to stay with you.
I can explain this to the officers when they
I will just. I need to take these initial details.
I know. He came to stay with me the night. I did my best to comfort him. I woke up this morning. He was in a mess. I tried again.
Right, just slow down again, Lewis. I need to take these details. So did you have an argument with him last night?
No, we were fine.
You were fighting?
No, we were fine. We were fine last night. We both went to sleep. I said that we were fine.
Okay, but why did he come to stay with you?
Because he was fed up with his home life.
Right, because he was fed up with his home life.
He's had a lot of problems. I've known him for a long time. He came to stay with me. I was in Thailand last week on holiday. He was in Spain on holiday.
Right, okay.
We both got back.
So you both went to bed, and then what's happened this morning?
I woke up. He was just standing up. He was in a mess. Hands on his face. I got up, I put my arms around him, and I said it was okay. He just shrugged me off and said no. I can't remember exactly what he said. He was going on about how he didn't want to go home. He was fed up with his life, and he didn't want to go.
Right, and okay.
I have a penknife on the side of... Sorry, in my room, adjacent to my bed, I have... A chest of drawers after shaving the TV and stuff on there. I had a penknife on there, folded. He picked it up, opened it, and then lost control.
Slow down. Let me just take those details here. Penknife on the bedside table. Brett grabbed this.
Yeah.
What, in order to harm himself?
No, in order to harm me. He opened it and then lost control.
To harm and opened it. It states he lost control.
In self-defense, put my left arm up to block him from stabbing me effectively. We struggled. I got him to the ground. He got up. I got the knife.
Okay.
Can you not interrupt me with this part?
Okay, go on.
Okay. This is being recorded anyway, isn't it?
Yep.
I grabbed the knife. And I stabbed him once in the back of the neck, I believe somewhere near the brainstem. He turned around, tried to carry it on, and I think I stumbled on my chest of drawers. I fell over. I got back up, backed away, and then I don't remember exactly what happened, but the fight ended with me cutting his throat. I believe I turned around and I slashed his throat. He fell face first on my bed. I tried to stop the bleeding.
Yep.
He fell onto the floor.
Yep.
I couldn't stop it. His throat was properly cut.
And he's still on the floor?
Yes. He fell onto the bed face first. I was trying to compress the wound
that
time. And
Lewis, are you still in the room where Breck is?
No.
Where are you?
Look, this... Don't... Okay, don't interrupt me. Just let me explain this, if this is being recorded. I didn't know what to do. I felt like...
Right, is the house where you are, is where you are and where Breck is, yeah? Yeah? You're in another room, are you?
Yes, I felt like taking my own life. I don't remember what happened after that. All I know is I dropped the knife in my hallway. I stripped down and just sat in the shower.
Right, you've left the weapon in the hallway.
Yes.
And have spent how long sitting in the shower?
I don't know. Look, are the police on their way? I can hear
something. They are.
Okay, I'm going to go and do my part. Please, thank you for your help.
Right, just listen.
That is one of, and correct me if you disagree, Hannah, I feel like that is one of the weirdest and most, like, cringe-inducing, toe-curling 999 calls we've ever played on this show.
Yeah, I my initial thought was, like, I've never heard anything like this.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's not like... Because it's not like he's reading a shopping list. We've heard those before. Mm-hmm. He is trying to compose himself, and he's taking deep breaths, and he's, like, just trying to get through it. But in the most bizarre way. Like, it's just very... It just struck me as... Here is such a maladjusted person.
Absolutely. I think the way in which he speaks about what is obviously a horrendous thing in that kind of flatlining way is very, very, it's very jarring to hear. But the other thing that really stands out to me is the level of control he needs even in this call. Because when the operator starts asking, he's like, please don't interrupt me. Let me just talk. This is being recorded anyway. But he does it in such a like weirdly like assertive way for someone yeah. who is so young. But like that level of control he needs in this, like even when he's saying things, I can't help but feel like, you know, he's trying to be like portray himself as this heroic person in some ways. Like he came here, he was a mess. I hugged him. I was trying mm-hmm. to make him feel better. But then when he talks about the killing, it's like he doesn't shy away from the graph. He's like, I turn around and I slash his throat.
It doesn't make sense. Like, those two things don't connect.
That's why I think you're completely right to say how maladjusted, because the whole call is such like a call of clashes and contrasts. Mm-hmm. The things he is saying with the tone in which he's saying it, how controlling he's being, but how almost weirdly polite he also is and
yeah.
in how he controls the situation. I also think he sounds and comes across much older than someone who was 17, 18.
Yeah, I would say early 20s.
So, yeah, it's an interesting call. And I think that I don't hear a lot of remorse.
No, I don't hear a lot of remorse.
It's very matter of fact.
It's matter of fact. And it's also like, even any sort of fear you hear in his voice, it's not like, oh, my God, what have I done? It's, oh, my God, I'm going to get arrested.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even register fear. I registered like almost him, it not feeling real in a weird way.
Yeah.
Almost like it was part of a game that he was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the maladjustment.
So at the end of that call, we hear Lewis getting off the phone because he can hear the police are outside, and Essex police were indeed outside. They arrived at the home of Lewis Daines and they found Breck's body lying in the hallway. He was dead and had a deep incision to the back of his neck. And it became clear very quickly, as the police began to uncover evidence, that Breck's death was nothing to do with an act of self-defense. Rather, it was a cold-blooded, premeditated murder. Police found duct tape in the bin that had been used to bind someone's arms or legs, and even more suspiciously, they found Breck's phone underwater in the sink, along with several hard drives and other bits of Breck's tech belongings. Clearly, Daines was trying to erase any history of their conversations, but surely a tech genius would know that they're never really gone. That didn't stop him. He'd even destroyed the data on Breck's blood-soaked laptop. But he had missed something.
In the bottom of Breck's overnight bag, police found his iPad. And through that, they pieced together a timeline of how then 18-year-old Lewis Daines had lured 14-year-old Breck Bednar into his deadly trap. As we already know, the pair had never stopped contacting each other, even when Breck's parents had taken away his gaming equipment, because obviously Daines had sent him that phone. But not only had Daines sent him the secret phone, he'd also sent him an absolute tirade of manipulative emails saying that Breck's mother was isolating Breck from his friends and telling Breck that he didn't feel he valued their friendship.
Oh my God.
Yep. And again, you can see here It feels like it's part of that control. How dare this bitch get in the way of what I'm doing? Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like that spurred him on more. We'll talk about his feelings towards Lauren later, but I feel like a lot of it is to be like, you think you can do this? Look what I can do. So sadly, Breck's parents' attempts to take Lewis Daines out of Breck's life had actually played into a key method used by this abuser to groom his victim, because he's obviously telling him, they're against us, and here's this secret, you know, using it as a wedge to drive them further and further apart. And obviously keeping secrets, especially keeping relationships secret, allow the abuser to further isolate their victim. In the case of Lewis Daines, it allowed him to thread his most fantastical lie so far, safe in the knowledge that it would never be heard by anyone who would pull it apart. And this is the danger, isn't it? Because obviously they weren't having access to all the conversations before, but at least they could overhear things and see things that were going on. Now it's driven it completely underground. And now they have no idea what's happening.
Our kids love secrets.
They do love
secrets.
They
love feel like they're getting one over.
Absolutely. And the lie that Lewis Daines had told Breck was that he had a life-changing illness and that he needed Breck to take over his multi-million dollar computer business.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Had this been said in front of the other boys in the TeamSpeak server, or had Breck not been hiding their relationship, this lie would have been pulled apart in seconds by any outside influence. We, in our rational grown-up minds, see that this million-dollar business and sudden illness is obvious bullshit, it's classic catfish material. But groomers like Lewis Daines create an environment where obvious red flags will be ignored by their victims. Daines had carefully created a dream job which he dangled in front of Breck for 9 months. And then, once he had successfully isolated Breck from people with his best interests in mind, he offered Breck that dream job. All Breck had to do was come over to Lewis Daines' house and sort out the paperwork.
After going through Breck's iPad and Lewis Daines' internet history, it became clear to the police that their first and final meeting had been planned over the course of weeks. It was not the result of Breck having a sudden suicidal breakdown and needing a place to feel safe. Daines had ordered duct tape, condoms, and syringes 3 weeks before Breck's murder, and Breck had pre-booked a taxi to Lewis Daines' flat a week before he went to Spain. Emails found between Daines and Breck sent on the 12th of February, 5 days before Breck's murder, also showed how Daines had pre-planned the story that Breck would feed his parents on the day that he travelled to Daines' house. He even specifically told Breck to tell his dad, quote, I've spent too many holidays and half terms inside. I'm going to spend this one outside with my friends. Again, it's like he knows what Breck's parents are going to respond well to. He's like, look, I'm so normal. He would have been like, act really happy, act really normal. Soon you'll have this entire multi-million dollar business that I've just given you, and then no one will care that you lied to them.
Mm.
On top of this, the police found that Lewis Daines had been sharing links with people on the TeamSpeak server, and these included some of the most graphic ISIS beheading videos that the police had ever seen.
A question. A rumination. If Lewis Daines has premeditated this, right, he's planned this, he's this master manipulator, he's the puppet master, and he's calculated the whole thing within an inch of its life, why does he hand himself in?
I mean, I think it comes down to, again, we would have to talk about what is Lewis Daines' motivation for why he does this. So let's talk about it. Like, why does he kill Breck? I mean, I think there's obviously a sexual element to it. Many of the details haven't been released about that, but we know he bought condoms. We know that he also had a previous charge for sexual offences when he was 15. There is a definite sexual element. Probably why the particular rock this eel was hiding behind was a TeamSpeak server filled with young boys. I also wonder if there is an element there of him wanting to destroy someone who maybe he perceived to have everything that he didn't have. So Breck had loving parents, a mother who is like, I hate this term, but she is like the mother bear. She, like, Lauren does everything for her son. And since Breck's death as well, she has become an advocate for internet safety. She spends all of her time campaigning around these kind of things. Like, she is what you would want any mother to be. And as with Barry, his father, he comes from a well-to-do family. Like, he's clearly loved. He's got friends. He's got all of this. And it's like Daines conducts a systematic approach to destroy all of those things in Breck's life. So I think those are the motives for why he goes after Breck and why he targets him specifically. As to why he hands himself in, I think there is an element of control. I think that we see it in the way that he conducts himself in the 999 call. We'll see it in things that he does after his trial and after his conviction. Spoilers. There is a huge element of him wanting to control his own narrative, but also if you are giving him the least favorable opinion, which I'm going to do because fuck that guy, is that he also wants to cause maximum amount of distress to the other people.
Very Paris Bennett.
It is very Paris Bennett. And I particularly think, similarly to Paris Bennett, not with his own mother, but I think Lewis Staines fucking hates Lauren. I think she represents everything that he never had. And I think he hates her for it. And I think that a lot of the stuff he does, I think, is specifically aimed to hurt her as much as possible. And I think that the control side of things and why he hands himself in, I think he knows I'm going to get caught. I'm going to get caught. I killed a 14-year-old in my house. I think his plan was always to get caught or not ever to get away with it. And I think he was like, I will hand myself in on my terms. Don't interrupt me when I'm telling you. Rather than, where's he going to go on the run anyway? Just because he told people he has all these resources. He has nothing. He has a flat that's rented for him by his grandparents. And I think he goes on the run. He knows he's going to get caught. So rather go out on my own terms.
That's true. I hadn't thought of it like that. On his own terms or not, he was charged and his trial began in January 2015. The court heard how Daines had worked away at Breck for over 9 months before he had succeeded in getting Breck to come to his flat. Richard Whittam QC told the court that there was evidence of sexual activity between the pair shortly before Breck's murder. Lewis Staines wasted no time. He pleaded guilty to murder. And when it came to his sentencing, Justice Cox told Staines, "You had befriended Breck and a number of other adolescent friends through an online community. And I'm sure that this murder was driven by sadistic or sexual motivation." Staines, who was by then just 19 years old, was sentenced to life imprisonment for Breck Bednar's murder. And that's a minimum of 25 years.
Wow. I mean, I know that's like basically what we have on the menu of prison sentences in this country. He'll be out when he's 45.
I was just trying to do that maths.
Yeah.
You beat me to it, as usual.
Well, 44, but yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Jesus.
Yep. And, you know, that should be the end of this tragic story. But unfortunately, Lewis Staines had one last wanky and manipulative trick up his sleeve. On the 26th of November 2015, Lewis Staines released an open letter in the form of an online blog.
No.
I know.
No.
Yes.
Never an open letter. Listeners, if you are in any way considering, at any stage in your being on this earth,
is this an open letter?
To pen an open letter. Here is my open letter to you.
My anti-open letter, open letter.
Just don't fucking do it. Nothing good ever happens.
No, please don't.
Ever. Look at poor Sinead O'Connor when she wrote that open letter to Miley Cyrus and then Miley Cyrus was really horrible to her.
That's how it happened?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Sinead O'Connor, mid one of her many breakdowns, wrote an open letter to Miley Cyrus during the Wrecking Ball era, where she'd just come out as this, I'm an adult and you can think about my vagina. Like, anyway, Sinead O'Connor wrote an open letter to her being like, Miley, like, these people don't care about you. Like, they're just making money off you, like, blah, 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 blah. And then Miley Cyrus wrote back being like, you're crazy. No one cares what you think, crazy old lady.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was a whole thing. Poor Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, don't write one of those and don't write any sort.
Just never an open letter. No. There are many other avenues you can take.
Yes, and definitely don't write one like this. Because Lewis Staines started this open letter by saying, quote, "The purpose of this statement is not intended to cause further distress to the family and friends of Breck. I am responsible for the death of Breck, a boy of just 14. Despite only being a young adult and just 4 months into legal adulthood myself, nothing will change the fact that while he was with me, I had a duty of care towards him, and I failed."
I think that's putting it quite mildly.
Oh, he's so grandiose as well, though. Like, firstly, the over-formalised language, even in this and also in the 999 call. It is so overly formal. But again, it shows, like, he's articulate, but it shows particularly poor social skills.
Yeah.
The way in which he's communicating and speaking. But it's the grandiosity of it. It's this, like, a boy of just 14. While I was a young adult, although I was only 4 months into adulthood. And then it's like, I owed him a duty of care and I failed. Like, duty of care? That's like, again, he's power playing the power dynamic here. Like, you say duty of care when it comes to things like a solicitor or a doctor or a parent or a teacher. He didn't owe him a duty of care. You owed him not to kill him.
Yeah.
You owed him not to stab him in the fucking neck, you piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
The grandiosity here, I mean, you know, that fits into so many personality disorders. We're not going to sit here and diagnose Lewis Daines with something, but I think it's clear to see that he's showing some very typical traits.
And he hasn't become any less manipulative in prison. He's trying to become the person he thinks will make his life easier. He thinks that by talking about his duty of care and taking responsibility for Breck's death, that he'll make himself more likable. But that doesn't work, because we know who he really is and how he operates. We're already behind his smokescreen. And this open letter doesn't help for many reasons. I'm going to give you a few now by telling you what else he said. Here we go. As many of the people involved in this case will know, I initially informed mutual friends of his death. What happened was out of character for both of us, and tragically, he lost his life. I hope that those close to him can draw some comfort from the fact that his death ensued seconds after he suffered the injury, a claim echoed by the prosecution pathologist. Because of the nature of the injury and its seriousness, resuscitation attempts made by myself were futile. Oh, well, that's all right then. I feel much better now. Thanks.
And I think, you know, there are realistically only really two possibilities when you're analysing that particular statement. Either Lewis Daines is so devoid of any empathy or any understanding of emotions that he truly believes that someone who knew and loved Breck Bednar could draw some comfort from knowing that he had been murdered quickly. Or Lewis Daines knows that nobody will take any comfort from that, and he's just doing it to cause distress. I would lean towards the latter.
I'm sort of leaning that way also.
Yeah. And I think this is given what we know of Lewis Daines. You know, I said we're not going to diagnose him, but I think he clearly shows narcissistic tendencies, the grandiosity, all of that kind of stuff. And he also fits many sort of psychopathic traits that we've discussed over the years over here at Red Handed. And I think he's also clearly very good at understanding human emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody who is a groomer, I know we're saying that he lacks sort of social communication skills, mm-hmm. but that's why he does his grooming over the internet, you know.
Yeah,
the first only time he meets Breck in person, he kills him. So I think he understands human emotions, and that's how he lured Breck in. You have to understand human emotions to be a good groomer and to be a good abuser. I'm just pretty sure that he knew exactly what he was doing. And I'm pretty sure, I'm going to keep coming back to this, that I know who this blog post was aimed at. It was aimed at Lauren, Breck's mum.
Yeah.
I think he fucking
I think you're absolutely right. And he gets another dig in at Lauren, because in this open letter, Lewis Daines goes on to dedicate several paragraphs to saying that Breck Bednar was being abused at home. He suggests that it was this abuse that led Breck to spend all his time in Daines' virtual safe haven.
Sounds like a bit of projection there to me.
Of course, Lewis Daines knows that Breck lived with his mum. He knows that she was the only adult in the house. So when he goes on to say, quote, I don't intend to name Breck's abuser who forced him to take comfort in the internet virtual world. I don't need to. They know who they are, as well as the police from the abuse files reported, and those close to Breck from the outline and details described above. So he knows that everyone is going to assume that that is Lorraine because that's who he lived with.
Yeah. And we know that Lorraine wasn't abusing Breck. So this shows you that this isn't about just a sort of lack of emotional connectivity on Lewis Daines's part. Mm-hmm. He knows exactly what he's doing.
And he knows that it will break Lorraine's heart.
Absolutely. And as if that wasn't enough, Lewis Daines published a second blog in January 2016, disputing the narrative shown in the BBC documentary Murder Games, The Life and Death of Breck Bednar. Murder Games, the documentary, is one we watched for this. It is available, I think it's on YouTube, so even international listeners, you can watch it very, very easily. And it is probably the most informative documentary on this particular case. And he really took issue with this show. And in the second blog, he says, the BBC are broadcasting a drama on Tuesday the 26th of January called Murder Games. I don't know why he calls it a drama because it's definitely a documentary, but maybe it's because he's saying it's all made up.
Right.
So he's like, this drama production they've put on.
Okay.
It's a factual documentary. He claims, this is a quote from his second blog post, it's basically a crusade against the online gaming community. Myself and the family's attempts to highlight police incompetence and sue two police forces. He really is very cynical, isn't he? Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure how he got access to watch this documentary, but he clearly has.
They're allowed TV in prison.
Oh, are they? Yeah. There you go. But secondly, it's not a crusade against the online gaming community. I mean, it's not any of the things that he said it is, but it's definitely not that. It actually makes online gaming look really fun. What it makes look less fun is being groomed and murdered.
Yeah, which doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. Danes then goes on in the second blog post open letter situation to attack the validity of Breck's parents' relationship. And he tries to pull apart some of Lorraine's statements to the press. He says, Breck's mother has said on record, the first year after Breck's death was spent in bed, unable to get out of it. This is simply untrue. How the fuck would you know? You're in prison.
I know. It's like, and I've seen those interviews with Lorraine. She talks about how fucking devastated she is by the murder of her firstborn son. And he's like, that's not true. She's lying. What the fuck? This is what I'm saying. Like, it's a personal crusade against her.
And he also goes on to say, he won't go into what he and Breck were creating computer-wise because it was probably fucking Frogger. Like, I just don't buy this. Not a second of it. But anyone who reads the emails between them will know that he, Danes, was in Dubai and Thailand 2 weeks before his death. No, he wasn't. Because we've looked, and there's no evidence to suggest that Danes was abroad during those times. How would he afforded to go to Dubai or Thailand or both? However, we have done a little bit of internet digging, and we found a website that allows you to see people's profile history on certain gaming platforms. And using that, we found that on February the 8th, 2014, Danes added the word abroad, smiley face with like the big D, to his gamertag profile in an effort to solidify this nonsense. That's all it takes.
Yeah, you just
your MSN status.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it interesting that he did that? Because he knew this was what he was going to say later.
Yes, right. Yeah, no,
again,
good point.
Again, the premeditation of this, the pre-planning of this. I think, again, similarly to other killers we've seen, I think part of the kick for Lewis Danes was the fantasy of the plot, the build-up to it. I think he killed Breck and then it was like, oh, it's done now. I've done what I wanted to do. So what can we conclude about Lewis Danes? Was he a narcissist? Well, his deep need for attention and approval from others would suggest so. Like the idea that he says that he had informed mutual friends about Breck's death. Those boys hated him.
Yes, true, very true.
And also the fantastical thinking and the lack of empathy, you know, all of these are indicative of not great traits. Was he Machiavellian? I mean, we can see this when there was so much manipulative callousness involved. So much indifference, so much immorality, and so much pre-planning and premeditation. So it certainly looks like it. I think Lewis Danes is an adolescent showing the dark triad.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah. And if you don't know what the dark triad is, we've talked about it on the show before. It is a combination of narcissism, psychopathy, and Machiavellianism. Those things on their own might make for an unpleasant person in some regards, but those three things together makes for a dangerous person.
Makes Jimmy Savile.
Yep, and possibly also Lewis Danes. So, I don't know, was Lewis Danes a psychopath? Well, at 18, he murdered a 14-year-old boy with seemingly no reason, and it all fits with us having a dark triad character on our hands. And on that note, we should leave this where it is, because I know we've just spent like an hour or plus talking about him, but that's exactly what he would want. So don't go and read his blog posts.
No.
We've read them for you, so you don't have to do it. And we've picked out the most interesting parts of it.
Damage control.
Yeah, don't read his blog posts. That's what he wants. Don't watch the documentary, though. It is pretty well made. And yeah, that is the...
There you go.
...fucking tragic and terrifying case.
Stay off the internet,
Bednar.
Kids. Apart from listening to podcasts on it, that's the only thing you're allowed to
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely. Because we aren't trying to groom you much. But yeah, it's scary, scary shit. God, sometimes I do think, like, obviously what, we're in 2022 now. If I ever had children in, like, 5 years' time, by the time in 20 years' time, they're on the internet, I won't have a fucking clue what's going on.
I think about that when I think about my grandma. My grandma was born in 1926. She has an iPad now. Like, the world has completely changed 17 times over since she was born, and she's seen it all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's mad.
So there you go. If you would like to hear us talk about cults and just bad uns, wrong uns, difficult ones, you can come over to our Spotify exclusive show from Parcast, which is called Sinister Societies. That comes out every week and is only on Spotify, so make sure you get over there. If that's not enough, you can go to patreon.com/redhanded to get even more red-handed goodness and lots of videos and stuff, and buy tickets to the live show, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Ashley Flowers, creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. Every Monday, me and my best friend Britt break down a new case, but not in the way you've heard before, and not the cases you've heard before. You'll hear stories on Crime Junkie that haven't been told anywhere else. I'll tell you what you can do to help victims and their families get justice. Join us for new episodes of Crime Junkie every Monday, already waiting for you by searching for Crime Junkie wherever you listen to podcasts.